Hi, today is September 17th, 2016. This is Mobius Podcast number 175. I'm Powder Goss Award, my good friend John Westfall. And similar to last year, John has got his new iPhone. Well, I am waiting on back order, and all because I think I ordered 5 minutes after you.
Yeah, well, you gotta strike when the apple is hot.
Apple just kept airing out on me.
Yeah, it is frustrating beyond belief, the pre-order process for most Apple products. And I don't know what the solution to that is, and I don't think that it's actually affecting Apple's bottom line in any way. So I don't think they have much ambition to fix the problem.
Yep, no incentive at all.
But it is, as I said, extremely frustrating when you would like to be able to spend money on a new product and you cannot even get that that money spent just because of the timing wise. So I definitely feel your pain on this.
Yeah, this is truly a first world problem.
It truly is, but it's, you know, it's all relative. First world problems are problems to people in the first world. So.
But you know, so my conspiracy theory is this is Apple's way of bonding their clientele and creating a heightened loyalty. You know, kind of like in boot camp where the drill sergeant is very harsh and cruel to his or her charges to bond them together as part of a, mm-hmm. I mean, it's part of a process. It's designed that way, so to speak.
Well, that could be it. I am generally one of the people who doesn't ascribe to the Apple is evil theories, but you never quite know.
Not saying it's evil. I'm saying it's calculated.
It's really funny you should bring up the Apple is calculating sort of thing. So I recently was on an iPhone 5 for a few weeks, as I mentioned last week, and I was quite shocked at how well it ran iOS 9 and iOS 10 when I upgraded it. And I've got other older devices. And so I think the thing that Apple was vilified for years over, which was the perceived notion by some that they intentionally made old stuff run worse so that you'd upgrade new stuff, I never quite bought into it, and I still don't buy into that. But that doesn't mean that I don't think Apple is calculating about certain things they do. So,
okay.
So, yeah, I've got an iPhone 7 Plus. Todd does not.
Yeah, yeah. This is a very familiar refrain. We repeated this this is a repeat of what happened earlier when you had your 6 Plus way before I did.
Yes. I had an iPad Pro before you had an iPad Pro.
Yeah, that was because I didn't buy one. But
that's true.
This time we ordered, and last time for the iPhones at least, we ordered it around the same time, literally within 10 minutes of each other. And still. So, at any rate, I did want to mention iFixit has one of its wonderful articles tearing it apart, tearing the iPhone 7 Plus 128GB version apart. And the thing I found interesting is that although the battery in the iPhone 7 Plus is larger than the 6S Plus, it's actually slightly smaller than the one in the 6 Plus. In terms of milliamps per hour.
You never quite know what to make of these things.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I was quite annoyed by compared to the 6 Plus, and I'm actually opening these right as we speak, the earbuds that came with the 5 and the 6 came in a nice little plastic case.
Right, a little white case with a clear top.
Yeah, well, this came in a plastic or in a paper box that I don't think is reusable in any way, shape, or form. And that's actually kind of disappointing because I've used that plastic case for many, many years now. This is kind of a downgrade, Apple. I'm kind of shocked that you would go from offering a case that could be used kind of repeatedly to something that's just kind of a paper shell.
Yeah, not even a good one.
Yeah, and the shell has on the back the adapter for the 3.5. So at least that adapter is pretty small.
Yeah.
It's not a huge,
small
ungodly
and losable
thing. Well, yes, probably very small and very losable.
Yeah.
So that is my one complaint, because I did use that that little case quite a lot.
Well, they're going to sell a case to you now for so.
Well, and I do think I will probably be buying AirPods when they come out, so I won't be as annoyed at that point. But
okay. And what if they come in a paper case?
I'll be more annoyed.
No, that's not true, because it comes in a chart case, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
So if they somehow come in a paper case, I will be shocked. Yeah. I'll wonder how Apple did that.
All right.
So now I've got to go back to figuring out all those ways that they tell you to, like, twist headphones and coil them and all that so that you can put them just loose in your bag. But it's been a good run without me having to remember to do that for a while.
Yeah. Well, I could never get it back in a plastic case, so I'm not too annoyed by it.
I did learn how to get it back in the plastic case, so it actually isn't as hard as it seems.
But. Okay. So the other two things I learned from the iFixit teardown, aside from the battery size, is that the 7 Plus comes with 6 of RAM, which is a lot. I think, what did it use with? 128, 256 gigabytes? I mean, it wasn't much in the early days, 10 years ago. And surprisingly, the iPhone 7 Plus has a 7 out of 10 repairability rating from iFixit. So it's, you know, not too bad. It's not as bad as you might imagine. At least as I imagined.
I've just also been looking at the new EarPods. They have a longer cable on them than
really?
The original EarPods. Yeah. I'm kind of looking
at
distance length between what's connected and what I have now. And it's pretty noticeable. It's at least maybe an extra foot of cable compared to what it was.
Right. And presumably this works in iPhones, older iPhones, right? If you so choose
If you so choose to connect with Lightning.
Yeah. Okay, let's run down kind of some of the things that I found interesting about, mostly iOS 10, since I don't have an actual iPhone 7 to talk about. But maybe you can talk about some of the things you like about the 7 Plus specific. So the unlock, you know, the swipe to unlock is gone. You know, and this, I guess this is a pun. Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Well, this gets a lot better once you, as many sites are reporting, toggle the little accessibility toggle so that you just have to rest your finger on it instead of actually press it. And I've done that on all my devices, especially my older ones. I will say that on the 7 Plus, the Taptic Engine feedback, which is the same feedback that you get on a modern MacBook where you don't actually have the trackpad moving, you just get that feedback that it's moving, that works really well. There are some people angry about the fact that that does require a test. Pardon?
How did the butt feel, now that it's not a physical down?
It feels almost, if you played with the touchpads on the new MacBooks, it feels exactly like that.
Where I have not,
you're pressing in and you get the sensation of something pressing down. Hmm. It's just slightly off of a real button. So it's good enough. You definitely know you pressed the button. And there are three different strengths for it that you can set it to.
So I updated my iPhone 6 Plus, which is now 2 years old, to iOS 10 the other day. And, you know, I have to say, I'm still not comfortable with the new, you know, unlock scheme. I'm always kind of looking and saying, now what?
Well, definitely toggle that setting and accessibility.
Okay, I think I will do that.
Settings, general, accessibility, home button, and then you toggle where it just says rest your finger, because that basically makes the behavior act like iOS 9 as long as you have a fingerprint reader. Now, if you have an older device like the iPhone 5, like I was using for 2 weeks, you're just out of luck. You've got to press the button. And that gets very frustrating on the older devices because those older devices, the muscle memory is swipe. And so I was swiping quite a bit and ending up in the camera instead of where I wanted to be.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, so next thing up is kind of related, and that's the new home screen, which I guess you could think of as the screen that is the left of the home. The today screen, which you can think left to the home screen, relatively or virtually speaking, is a very different card-like look compared to the older screen in iOS 9 and earlier. I think it has too much white space, but it is easier to read. But it has less information. Like my calendar hardly has any information in the new today screen. What do you think?
I think it's going to force people to actually think a little bit about how they want to organize that. And that's something that our mutual friend Janik Park has always talked about. You know, if you really use that view, it's extremely powerful. Mm. I see this as Apple's way to try to get people to finally start using that view because they're going to basically make you customize it. And once you customize it, I think you get a lot of use out of it. But the default customizations are not all that friendly. And plus, You also have to think about the favorite apps that you use. For example, I don't use the stock calendar app. I tend to use Fantastical, which means I have a widget for that that I have to throw in, that sort of thing.
Okay. So I'm going to take a quick pause right here in our podcast. Okay, we're back from our little minor technical difficulty, John. And hopefully our audio feed should be better now. But the what I wanted to mention was that, or I wanted to ask you, is what is it that you modified in your Today View that you've made it better for you?
Well, since I am currently using the device that we're talking about to record this podcast, on this particular one, I haven't done too much. On the iPads, I've done a lot of just kind of moving around of widgets, mm-hmm. because the iPad view on today is very bare. I think it's got one thing on the left column and a few things on the right. So, but some of the apps that I use quite regularly, like To-Do, which is my to-do list manager, Fantastical, which I use for calendar, they all have their own widgets. So it's a matter of just kind of deciding, okay, I don't want the Apple Up Next widget. I'd rather have the Fantastical widget and the To-Do widget and those sorts of things. And once you get those all set up the way you like them, it's a very functional view. It's definitely what Janik has been telling us for years, that you really should use that view.
Okay. All right. And let's see. The next thing on the list is something I found kind of interesting. I knew it was coming, but I didn't quite know what it would look like, and that's the new Photos app, which I find very Google Photos-like, although not quite as powerful, maybe, at least with the image recognition stuff, and definitely the face recognition stuff. It split me up, even though the photos were all taken this year into three different people, for example. I don't think Google Photos did that.
You are three different people. You just didn't know that until this very moment. So one of the things I've noticed about Google Photos and regular Apple Photos, yeah, they're getting much closer in functionality, which is good. I still think I give a tip to the hat for Google Photos, just because it's a lot easier to access on a Windows machine or a non-Apple machine. Even though you can get into iCloud.com and go to your photos that way, mm-hmm. I like the Google interface better. And plus, I like the fact that the Google Photos won't take up as much space on my devices because they're stored principally in the cloud. Even though Apple's gone through lengths to not store as many local cache copies and that sort of thing, I think I'm probably going to think of Google Photos as my long-term photo storage and Apple Photos as what I have from the last couple of months before it got into Google Photos.
Yeah, and I'm treating it exactly the same way. So Apple Photos is just for the photos on my phone. I don't store things up in iCloud anyway. I use, because it's not unlimited like Google Photos. Mm-hmm. So Google Photos would be my permanent store. I know it's compressing it.
Now, here's a cool thing that I did not realize until yesterday, because I didn't have a 6S, but live photos do upload to Google Photos.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you download them...
That's recent, by the way.
Yeah, just within the past 4 or 5 months they added that.
Yeah.
But when you download them, you actually get a zip file that is the image and the .mov.
Right.
So if you wanted to, you could combine them together, but it's at least nice that way. I don't know how Dropbox handles it yet, but I'm going to have to play around with that because I like live photos, but I'm not exactly sure how many I will want to keep the photo video or the video MLB portion
part.
Of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have live photos turned on permanently on my iPad Pro Junior, but I don't take that many photos with it. You know, it's just not a big deal, mm-hmm. and I'm not so sure. You know, and of course it increases the size of each photo you take, so to speak, because of the MOV file, the video file.
Yes.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting question. I have not decided what to do yet. I know my wife has a 6S, I think, and she inadvertently left live photos. She doesn't take a lot of photos. It's not a big deal. But she either... I turned it on for her and forgot to turn it off, or just left it on for her. But I think everything she takes is a live photo. But again, she doesn't take photos like I do. She doesn't take daily photos.
But she's just not as into documenting her life.
No. And not a techie. Okay, next thing up, the new music app, which, you know, the new Today View, I think it's a lot... Well, it's easy to read because the fonts, I think, are bigger.
Yes, that's definitely true.
But there's a lot of wasted space.
I would agree with that. I think in the end, the readability will make it more accessible for most users, and I think that's what Apple's going for. I think Apple's come to the conclusion that the reason people don't use some of its features are because they're not accessible enough. But the only my biggest pet peeve actually with iOS 10 is in the music app.
Oh.
And that is when you have items in a up next list, you can delete individual ones out, but the all clear or all empty button is missing. And I use that quite a bit where I would say load up five or six songs and I knew how long they would take and I just wanted the end of it for it to stop. I wouldn't want it to keep playing things.
Got it.
Of course, now I also can't see the time of each track like I used to be able to see with the old music app. So that's, I guess, a usage scenario I won't be doing as much anymore either. So that's a secondary pet peeve of this removing of things.
Yeah, and you know, to me, the music app has become less and less usable over time, which is sad because it is my primary music device. And I wonder if I'm going to have to go find for a third-party alternative like I did with the podcast app, which became useful several generations. Useless, I should say.
Yeah.
Apple's podcast app became useless a couple of years ago. You convinced me to go to, now I'm forgetting Marcus Armont's podcasting. What is that called? Overcast.
Yeah.
But now I wonder if we need to find a third-party app for music playing, and even if there is one.
Well, and the problem is going to be if you use iTunes Match or Apple Music, and I use both of those.
Yeah.
So I use both. I'm stuck with the internal music app, but I it's usable in my opinion.
Yeah, and I guess that's to answer my own question. I subscribe to Google Music, but not Apple Music. But the problem is Google Music app for iOS is just as bad, if not worse, than Apple's music app. Both of them are pretty bad in my opinion, from a usability point of view. Or maybe we're expected to just use Siri. I don't know.
Yeah, Siri will do everything for us.
Yeah. Okay, next up. This is one that's probably not important to you since you're quite a bit younger than me, but there's a new magnifier feature in iOS 10. You don't need a new iPhone for it. It works fine on my 6 Plus. And if you go to accessibility and turn on the new magnifier, if you triple tap your home button, you can see a magnified view of something. Now, for those of you with aging eyes, and if you've ever seen these tiny little serial number things on gadgets you need to type in to get some kind of warranty work or something, or basically anything tiny you need to read, this is a really handy feature. I had a third-party magnifier, but it's nice that it's built into Apple's accessibility area now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just my tip. Yeah, you can see John's really excited because he doesn't need it.
I actually just haven't played with it yet. And I there are times I need to magnify things.
Yeah, yeah.
So I intend to play with it.
Now, another thing that has become less and less useful to me over time is Siri, which I used to use a lot. But over the last, I would say, the last update, iOS 9, Siri became less responsive. It had a harder time recognizing what I was saying. Sometimes it wouldn't even figure out I was saying something to it, especially in the car where I used to use it a lot. Now I don't use it at all, actually, because it's pretty much useless. But one thing that it does do that doesn't require it to recognize my voice is a new setting to announce calls, and you can choose when it announces it, you know, when you're only on Bluetooth or always and that sort of thing. So I've turned that on, although I don't get a lot of voice calls, but you know.
The other thing, a couple of new features in that same realm, there's an emergency bypass feature now. Have you heard of this?
No, I haven't. Go ahead with that one.
You basically go into a contact,
yeah.
And you can specify for a specific contact or contacts, you can have multiple, that you would like this person to be able to bypass Do Not Disturb, and even bypass the hard silent switch on the side. So it's a great, I can see it being a really nice thing if you were worried about something, or if you've got someone in the hospital and it's like, okay, anytime day or night I need this person to be able to get through to me. But yeah, that's definitely a new feature that if you do heavily use Do Not Disturb mode or your silent switch, you might want to know about.
Yeah, I'm always in silent mode, actually. I'm always in vibrate.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay. And another new thing that I found interesting, at least, is Apple Maps now can show parked location. You can find it. I think it's turned on by default in Settings Maps.
It is, because mine did it last night without me even asking it to. Got out of the car, walked into the restaurant, sat down, looked at my phone, and had a notification saying, you parked right around here. If you need the exact location, tap and it will tell you. So that was kind of a cool feature to see enabled by default without me having to even tell it anything.
Yeah, you know, I'm not quite I think the way it works is, first of all, you need something with Bluetooth in your car turned on. I'm not sure if it is very specific about what it wants to see, but let's assume it's like a speakerphone type of thing. And I guess that when you break that Bluetooth contact, it kind of remembers where it breaks the contact, and it uses that as an approximation of where you parked your car. Is that how it works?
Yeah, it just, I think it realizes what a car Bluetooth looks like, and yeah. It knows it was connected for X amount of time, and so it just learns and says, okay, you must have just gotten out of your car.
Right.
And,
so it, yeah, so it must be, like, accurate to within 10 meters, which is not bad. That's, you know, a little bit more than 30 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be enough for you to kind of look around to find your car.
This is one of those features that I always classify as those features that are putting third-party developers out of business. Because there have been a whole bunch of third-party apps that the entire thing they do is tell you where your car is.
Yeah.
And well, so
long to those.
Yeah, so long to those.
But that's the danger, right? When you pick a very niche application that you know Apple's going to take over.
Yeah, that's very true.
Right, and they've done this in the past, even in a Macs. There have been several very popular third-party applications that did things, and then Apple integrated it in, and there goes that third-party business.
Yep, very true.
Right. Yeah, so developers, you know, you always got to be wary. If you create something really cool, and Apple looks at it and says, oh, yeah, we could do that too.
Yeah, Apple looks and goes, you're right, that's really cool, let's do it.
Yeah. Okay, so that was the last of kind of my iOS 10-ish things, since I don't have an actual... Do I sound bitter? Actual iPhone 7 Plus.
I mean, yeah. I could bring up other things you're bitter about.
Oh, gosh.
But we won't.
Yes,
I don't want to trigger bad memories.
Yes.
We didn't do a trigger warning beforehand, so...
That's right, no trigger warning.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got a couple of things in, and I'd like to just hear your overall impression of the 7. So what are your couple of things you want to talk about?
So the 7, my overall impression is that it's a very logical upgrade for a 6 Plus or a 6S Plus.
Okay.
It's the first time I've upgraded and not felt jarred by something, so because it is about the same size, and it's very much like someone just took my 6 Plus and souped it up and made it faster. Kind of like if you went and got your car detailed and they threw an extra engine in there while you're getting it detailed. So that was right. That's basically my overall impression. I'm happy with it. I like the upgrade to it. I definitely like some of the new features. You know, the videos coming out yesterday about how long you can submerge your 7 in water and 7 Plus in water. That just gives me some good peace of mind.
Yeah,
that it
actually,
might be safe to push me into a pool again, even though if you do that, you're taking your life in your hands. So those are the – I'm happy. I would not say that I am blown away, because there's not really enough to be blown away by, but it's a good upgrade.
Now, you upgraded from a 6 Plus, like I am
yes.
hoping to do in the near future. So you didn't have, as you mentioned earlier, you didn't have live photos, you didn't have the 3D touch, and that those sort of things. So how much of a difference has that made? Like 3D touch, has that changed the way you use it? Like it's
not
allowed?
Yet. I'm actually surprised at how few things still support it. I thought there would be more by now, after it's been out for a year or so. But I think it will over time. I think I just have to play around with it and get a bit more familiar with the operating system, and then I will notice some things that are much quicker now than they were before.
Yes. Go ahead.
And there are the apps that I really do use a lot, like Evernote and Drafts, they have Force Touch widgets, so I can use those. Tweetbot has it. Facebook has it. My To-Do Manager, To-Do has it. Fantastical has it. So if I remember to use them, I've got options. Other reactions, I like the Home app in iOS 10, especially since I have 4 iHome remote control outlets that I use around the house for
right.
different lights.
It's the home automation stuff, right?
Yep, that works really nice. And so, yeah, overall, I'm very happy with it. I got the silicone case, as I mentioned last week.
Yeah.
It's got a pretty good feel to it. It doesn't feel too plasticky, so I think I'll be happy with that.
Now, remind me again, is that from the Apple Store, or did you buy that from Amazon?
Yep, it's an Apple Store silicone case.
I still don't, haven't bought a case yet, so I have to think about this.
And, yeah, so I think it's a good upgrade. And I'm really tempted. So here's the thing. I'm now, as of October 3rd, I'll be off contract with Verizon.
Mm-hmm.
So since I'm paying full boat next year, I might just join the upgrade program.
Oh, okay. I did this year, by the way.
Yeah. I'll see. I'll let you be the first one on that, and we'll see how you like it. And then maybe I'll keep this 7 Plus as kind of my testing phone for a few years and then start doing the regular upgrades through the upgrade program.
Yeah. And, you know, going back to that one, you know, I don't know if this is true or not, since I only joined that program this upgrade cycle, but people who joined it last cycle are saying that they were not allowed to buy the phone they wanted. I don't know how they know that, but apparently they feel like they were not allowed to upgrade at the same speed at which others could.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
I have not read anything about that, but I definitely would like to know more.
I'm going to go look into that since I'm not affected this time around. Since basically, they're saying there's a bias towards new customers like me, so to speak. You know, at least new to the program.
So you're fine with being biased toward right now?
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm okay with it. But next year, I might be a little...
You'd like them to fix it for next year.
That's right. That's right.
And a couple other things. So I've been using macOS Sierra on my MacBooks.
Yeah.
All of them except one of, I actually have 4 Mac machines. 2 of them are on Sierra, 2 are still on El Cap. One thing that kind of annoyed me was I set up the Apple Watch to unlock my MacBook yesterday night, and it still has not successfully unlocked my MacBook one time. So I'm not exactly sure why it is unhappy with that, but hopefully that'll be something that will get fixed once the final OS Sierra comes out.
Which is Monday? Tuesday? Something like that?
Tuesday sounds right for that.
Yeah, the 20th.
Let's see. What were the other... There was another interesting thing about upgrading early and the watch. It's all running together. Apple, when you dump all this stuff on it, it all runs into a blur.
Yeah.
The last thing I had, this is, I think, the one that intrigued you the most. So as we've talked about, I now have in my bag that I take to work with me every day an iPad Plus and a Surface Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually just got a new bag this week. ThinkGeek had a sale, and as I was buying some stuff, it said, your point value is good enough, you can get any of these things for free.
Wow.
So I kind of looked through it, and there was a bag that they sell that they say is for if you go to like a Comic-Con or any other kind of convention.
Right.
It's basically a very slim bag that you can kind of move through crowds with. It's got a very long cross-body strap. And I picked up one of those for free, and it's actually a great little bag for just 2 tablets and, you know, stylus pens and a few other little knickknacks and a paper planner. So that's been my bag, and I've been using it. But that means that when I go places, I have the option of, do I set up the iPad Pro? Do I set up the Surface Pro? And I really like that flexibility. There are certain things I still am using the iPad Pro for exclusively, taking notes in Evernote and things like that in meetings. But the Surface Pro is definitely much more useful, especially for corporate tasks. When I'm on the corporate network, or even the VPN connects, obviously, a lot better through a real operating system, real desktop operating system than a mobile operating system. So it's interesting to me. My overall thoughts of the state of Apple right now over the last few years is that there's gradual improvement.
Mm-hmm.
It's a slower pace, but it's a deliberate pace. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had the upgrade headaches like we used to have. Remember going from like Snow Leopard to Lion or Mountain Lion. And all those ones where it was like basically you upgraded your MacBook and you took about 2 months before all your programs worked again.
And Wi-Fi stopped working sometimes.
Yeah, random things would just die. Same thing with iOS, where if you upgraded from 7 to 8, you could, you know, potentially have a bunch of problems. So I'm seeing Apple as moving at a much more deliberate and slower pace, which I kind of like. And I wish Microsoft kind of worked like that, because Microsoft is more and more the schizophrenic company, where there are parts of Microsoft, namely the iOS apps that they're creating for Apple, or Office in general tends to be pretty stable, other than whatever team is working on the Metro apps for Office, which all are crap. Those are the things that Microsoft seems to be doing well. It just seems like they can't get consistency. Apple, across every Apple product I have, seems to be delivering as the ones they are upgrading. So things like Mac Pros, where you haven't seen an upgrade in over 1,000 days. Yeah, I don't know what to tell you about that. But the actual products that they are upgrading regularly, it seems like they've got a stable sort of upgrade philosophy now. Whereas with Microsoft, it's kind of two steps forward, one step back every upgrade that I've had with them. So I hope that tech is starting to move toward a maturity where, instead of saying, okay, let's throw every new thing we can into every release, it's more along the lines of, well, what can we improve and should we improve it, and how fast should we improve it?
And the reason I found that surprising is that a lot of people are criticizing Apple for this, actually, right? So they're saying,
oh yeah,
there's no more one more thing kind of announcement that you just say, wow, that's super new and cool. It shows that, what they're saying anyways, the post Steve Jobs era, basically doesn't have the wow factor.
But I don't think this is a Steve Jobs era thing, although Steve Jobs lived in the era where you could have wow factors. I think it's that, look at the companies that are trying to be hyper innovative, like Samsung. Release a new product every few months, new Galaxy something or another. And then you get situations where, say, your products are exploding randomly because maybe you didn't do enough QA. I mean, who knows who dropped the ball in that one with the Note 7. But what would I rather have? A company that gives me a solid upgrade once a year, or a company that really would like me to consider upgrading my phone, four or five times a year? I don't think anyone ever will do that. So I don't really know what the point is of having such a rapid release cycle, other than to just say, we've got the new hot thing. We've got the new hot thing. We had the new hot thing 2 months ago. Now we have another newer, hotter thing, literally, in the terms of the Note 7, this month. So it's a weird thing. I can understand when I was a younger geek, I really wanted everything as new and as, give me the latest and greatest, and I don't care how much it costs. I want it now. And now I'm thinking, as I've gotten older, and especially as I have gotten more business-oriented, as my jobs have kind of picked up more, I don't have time to say, okay, I'm happy with an unstable thing so that I can upgrade every couple of months.
Right.
I'd rather have stable upgrades once a year.
Right.
So yeah, that's where I wish Microsoft, I think actually in terms of happiness at my overall mobile setup right now, I've got two tablets and a phone that I can take anywhere on campus, do whatever I need to do. And I have a base of operations MacBook in one of my offices, and I have a MacBook Pro at home, and I've got a really old MacBook that just kind of sits in the other office, not doing much. But I seem to have a very functional mobile setup, and I think that's mostly because I've had time to refine it versus every new year going, oh, geez, do I start carrying this around? Do I start carrying that around? Do I get the new phone that can do just this one feature, because will that really improve my productivity or not? It's the same thing when I teach, experimental design, and we talk about don't change a whole bunch of things at once, because you lose all internal validity in that manner. It almost seems like my tech life, I have higher internal validity now because I'm not making drastic changes so often.
Right. And I should note that, speaking of Samsung's Galaxy Note 7, which has some problems with its battery catching fires spontaneously, is that the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission issued a formal recall of the smartphones this past Thursday. So if you've got a Samsung Galaxy Note 7, do note it is under formal recall and you should get it replaced.
Yeah. Generally, fire is a bad thing.
Fire is a bad thing indeed.
Unless you don't have it, then you want it. If you're stranded on a desert island and you happen to have a Note 7, then, man, you are lucky.
Right.
But otherwise, fire, bad. Get phone replaced.
Right.
And that is just such a, as many have pointed out, I'm not particularly a big fan of Samsung, but I wouldn't wish this sort of fiasco on any tech company.
No.
Because this is a horrendous, horrendous thing that affects the entire market. It doesn't just affect Samsung, because lithium ion battery tech is not radically different between suppliers. And I think that Samsung just got a bad batch that they didn't have enough QA on. And this is what's happening.
Right. And I don't know if this is true, so I offer this as, you know, hearsay, but I think I recall reading or hearing that it depends on where Samsung sourced their batteries. So apparently, if the batteries you source from their Chinese manufacturer batteries, whoever they contract there, it's okay. But if it's their own, or, you know, whoever they sourced in Korea, then they have a problem. Mm-hmm. So it's not every single 7 that has that may have this problem.
And the problem there is you have no idea what battery you have sitting in your Note 7. You could buy two Note 7s from the same place, and if they came from different lots in shipment, you've got a chance that you have different batteries. Indeed. And the Note 7, I don't think, has a removable battery. That, I think, went away with the Note 5 was the last one to have a removable battery. So this means you can't even take out your battery and look at it.
Yeah. Which is the same for the Apple. If it ever happened to Apple, then...
Oh, yeah.
You know.
That's why I said this is I really hate the glee that some people take, you know, if you're a Mac fanboy or if you're the Windows Phone fanboy, the lone one out there somewhere. The people where they kind of go, oh, well, you know, I told you not to buy a Samsung because they're crap. And then wait a couple of years. It might be your phone that has the same problem.
That's true.
Hopefully this will become a case in around the tech world of how better to do battery QA. So that you don't have this anymore. But it is definitely, you know, as you try to make things cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, the little tiny pieces inside the batteries that keep the explodey parts from hitting each other and exploding, you really want to make sure that you don't cheap out on that.
Yeah. But, you know, speaking of QA, it's not limited to Samsung as a problem. I mean, Microsoft has had a ton of problems with their Windows 10 Anniversary Edition update where, you know, webcams don't work and... I think they had a PowerShell problem. I don't know. I think Microsoft makes that one too, maybe. so it's, yeah, it's hard to figure out what's going on when, you know, literally millions of people are beta testing it. And you would think somebody in Microsoft's PowerShell group would have tested it with Anniversary Edition, and yet nothing. And even with this iOS 10 upgrade, apparently if you're on T-Mobile, you had some problems over the last couple of days, although I think Apple released a fix for you. So interesting problems.
Yeah, and definitely ones to keep an eye out for and to think about how better tech should handle this and not basically revel if your company to hate is the one that's having it happen, because that's definitely not what I think Microsoft and Apple are doing right now with Samsung and what Google's doing. Anyone who produces any kind of thing with a lithium-ion battery is watching this very carefully to see how to avoid it in the future.
Okay. Well, before we sign off, I want to wish those of you who have your Apple phone, iPhone 7 or 7 Plus, well, and hope you're having lots of fun with it. In the meantime, I will spend the next several weeks apparently obsessively checking my Apple Store status to see if they're actually shipped mine, and I'm checking it right now, and so far, nada. Nothing. Do I sound bitter? Yeah.
Yeah, you do. I gotta tell you, you sound a little bitter, Todd.
That's all right. It gives me... I'll put a positive spin on it. It'll give me time to look for a case.
Yes, it definitely will. I am really eagerly awaiting, and this happens every time I get a new iPhone... I tend to swap between a slip case, like the one I have now, and the 12 South book case. So that usually comes out in November, December each year. So I'll be looking forward to that. Case shopping can be just as fun as shopping for a bag.
No, it's not. At least not for me. I do want to say this, though. You know, the last time I was in a real rush, so I got my phone in October again, and I was just about to fly out to go visit my daughter. For a kind of a family weekend at her university. And I happened to find this case from a company called Joto, J-O-T-O, on Amazon. It was really inexpensive. I think it was like $15 or $16 for my iPhone 6 Plus. Fits great, has worked great. I've dropped my phone a couple times, and I think it's protected it pretty well. I looked for it again, you know, for my 7 Plus, but I didn't find anything from them for that. So I'm a little disappointed, especially since it was a really good price point. So I am still looking for a case. Otherwise, I'd be pretty happy if Johto had something for a 7 Plus. So if you're out there listening, Johto, I'm ready to spend my $16 or $17 on your case if you come out with one for the 7 Plus, because I've been really happy with the one that's been in my 6 Plus. Alrighty, so we're hoping to have a good friend of ours join us today. Unfortunately, he had a couple of emergencies and could not join us. We will hopefully he can join us next time. And that brings to close Movies 175. We're coming up to our, I got to think about this, 8th anniversary podcast. We got to go get Frank on again.
You know, it's just time flies when you're having fun.
Yep. Been doing this for a while now. I think I started this in 2008 with Frank. But in any case, we will get Frank McPherson on sometime soon. Some of our other friends like Don and Jack and Jason Dunn and a whole bunch of other folks we want to bring back. Don Watkins. So we'll figure it out. We have a lot of guests that hopefully will be able to join us in the future. We just need to figure out when their time is, you know, when they have the time and when they have the interest in whatever topic we have for that week.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Okay, folks, we had a little bit of technical problems this time, John, but...
but at least I have an iPhone 7 Plus.
Burn. Okay, and we'll talk to you next time.